It's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and this is your Sunday Spin. Wanted to play one more cut because of all of the goings on in Republican presidential politics, and out in Iowa, Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz created a bit of a controversy when he explained how, despite Democratic attacks, he didn't see a war on women.
When the war on women came up, Republicans would curl up in a ball. They'd say, "Don't hurt me." Jiminy Cricket, this is a made-up, nonsense example. Last I checked, we don't have a rubber shortage in America. Look, when I was in college, we had a machine in the bathroom. You put 50 cents in and voila! So yes, anyone who wants contraceptives can access them, but it's an utterly made-up nonsense issue.
There you go. That's the state of the political debate today. Well, we're going to talk about the state of the state right now. Joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is State Representative Ron Sandak, Republican from Downers Grove, a Republican House floor leader. And Representative Sandak has been in the legislature since 2010. But actually, you kind of did the reverse because you started out as in the state Senate and then moved over to the House. I assume it's because everybody refers to the state Senate as the nursing home of Illinois government.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's certainly a sleepy, docile place in comparison to the People's House, which is rancorous.
Raucous, that's for sure. You know, I wanted to have you on to talk about last week in Springfield and the fact that we did have a little bit of movement here. It was a bill that would release $3.1 billion to pay Illinois lottery winners, help cities and towns with their motor fuel tax money, operate the 911 emergency phone centers, some money that went to the Secretary of State's office, which had stopped sending reminders to renew vehicle registrations. It was a compromise.
Which
you don't hear much of these days in Springfield. But is this a sign of anything changing?
Yes and no. Clearly, it was something that should have been done earlier, Rick. And it was unfortunate that it took as long as it did to get something pretty sensible concluded. As you know, there are lots of forces in play, and there is no instance of any one side wanting to give the other the upper hand as we enter into the political season, which never seems to end anymore.
Right.
But it's good that it got done. There have been a couple other small instances of compromise and what I say is instances of sense and sensibility. Are we going to see more next month because there's some reduction in vote tallies that are required? There's some reduction in temperatures, a little bit at least, because of conversations that have occurred. I don't hold out a ton of hope that it's going to happen so soon, but I do think it will happen. I think it has to happen, and everyone agrees on that kind of premise.
Well, I know everybody's talking about come January, and that's, you know, for legislation to take effect immediately requires a 3/5 supermajority of the House and Senate. After January, it's back to a simple majority. So, yes, the numbers come down to pass something. You also have the fact, too, that we have just gone through the filing period for the primary election. So people kind of have an idea of what the political climate is. And people, I think, were anxiously awaiting to see on both sides, you know, how things would line up. Do you think with filing being over, that changes the dynamic?
Not yet, because filing is over, but it's the petition challenge season now. So we're going to see who actually stays on the ballot, who has challenges. There's always some intrigue and interest in that process. But as it looks right now, ironically, Rick, it looks like the Democrats in the House particularly will have the more interesting primary season. Why that's occurring is some people's best guess and speculation. But because the reduction in the vote tally goes from three-fifths majority to a simple majority isn't enough of the calculus to determine if we can get something done, because now 20 Democrats, four or five Republicans in the House have presumably have primary challenges. They're not folks that are going to be taking a lot of brave votes in the short term, given they have elections coming up in March.
Right. Well, and also, I mean, that has always been kind of what I've seen that is kind of the roadblock to any progress,
right,
is that you still have the general election, too. And if there isn't an opponent on the other side, they can plug one in, you know,
oh, yeah,
if nobody's filed. How do you vote for necessarily raising revenue and making some really tough budget cuts,
right,
with the big election up?
So that's always the question now. And so you can always use an election as an excuse to continue in perpetuity of just standing still and letting the world run us over. I mean, Illinois is a financial train wreck. Anyone that can do basic math can figure that out and understands the resulting difficulties. And they're only compounding. They're only getting worse. So stuck in a quagmire of fear of an election is going to have to be, frankly, tackled from both sides of the aisle. And I think the right recipe for that is occurring. Look, what's happening in Springfield is ugly, and it's not something we should be proud of. But if we weren't having this great debate, if we weren't having this great reckoning, it would just be the ordinary course of raising taxes, continuing to raise spending, and not fixing some of the fundamental problems and flaws this state has. So while I do not hold hope, I'd love to be wrong, that something gets done in January, I do think something gets done before April, and I do think it will be something, it will be a great compromise, and it will take people on both sides of the aisle to shed their fear and start acting responsibly and not fear an election. And in fact, any politician that says, you know, I'm not going to do anything and I'm going to stand still ought to be jettisoned, because it's time for action now.
So you don't see anything till after the March primary?
I don't. I hope I'm wrong, Rick. I often am when it comes to guessing politics, but I don't think so.
That's still, I mean, but we as you say, these problems accelerate the longer we're without a budget, because the backlog of unpaid bills grows, the overspending without the revenue to support it, you know, puts us in the hole even further.
There's no question. If anyone that's interested in finding out the depths of financials, the financial chaos that the state of Illinois is in, they can go to Leslie Munger, the state comptroller's website, which keeps kind of a daily ticker.
Right, the running tab.
Yeah. And it's daunting. You know, she pays bills when money comes in. And, of course, when there's no money in, the bills accumulate. And I think they're between $6.7 and $7 billion. By the end of this month, some speculate it could be as high as $8 or $8.5 billion. The state does not have the ability to issue currency, and we cannot incur new debt right now because of the impasse. So all we do is just put bills on the side and just not pay them for a while and kind of stick it to our creditors, which is a horrific way of doing business, no doubt about it. At the same time, this is how the state has been transacting business for years.
Right.
For years. And it's fine. It's finally the time to stop it. And I think the great reckoning, that I call it, in Springfield, that's occurring. And it's not fun. It's ugly. And it's frustrating. It's still a good thing to have, because if we weren't doing this, maybe the bills would be at $4.2 billion, Rick, but we'd still be doing the same thing. It's now finally getting the attention of everyone, and that's going to cause movement. I hope it's next month. It could be April. But in that window, I think movement will occur, and it will be positive.
We're speaking with State Representative Ron Sandak, Republican from Downers Grove. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Get an awful good girl, Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight.
The University of Illinois reports, helping us celebrate the holidays here. And I'm with University of Illinois graduate Ron Sandak, state representative, Republican from Downers Grove, here in the Allstate Showcase studio. We're talking about the state budget impasse, which I think we could just have that as a weekly feature here on the Sunday Spin. But Representative, I wanted to ask you, as a former mayor, one of the issues, of course, is the idea of a property tax freeze. And the governor has made no bones about we got to do something about property taxes. And, of course, everybody hates property taxes. And to me, it goes back to the whole issue of how it's an archaic form of taxation. But nevertheless, but as part of his call to freeze property taxes and to allow, he wants to allow municipalities, school districts, flexibility when it comes to collective bargaining. And Democrats say that's a poison pill right there. What, as a mayor and as a Republican, you know, is that a must-have?
Well, here, there's a couple of things, and it's a great question. First of all, property taxes is something that makes people's their blood boil. I go door to door. I've talked to people in my area, in the 81st, and taxes are high, Rick. They're really, really high. And when they talk to friends and family in different states, and they have comparable homes or, frankly, less homes, less expensive homes, they're paying two, sometimes three times the amount of real estate taxes. And that's aggravating. So a freeze, especially after the economic bust that occurred where values were declining rapidly and dollars were still increasing, that was an anathema to people that just said, wait a minute, that doesn't make a lick of sense. The way we have to look at taxes right now in Illinois, and that means all taxes and all revenue, is what I say is we need a reset button. And I think a two-year property tax freeze helps the larger context of a reset, because here's the bottom line. Pensions, state pensions, particularly teachers' pensions, which is what is picked up by the state.
Right.
Speaker Madigan for years has been trying to shift the go-forward cost of all pensions onto the locals. The theory is pretty simple. Look, school districts, you cut your collective bargaining agreements with your teachers. You put on your local taxpayers what it's going to cost, except the state picks up the employer costs all the time and sometimes portions of the employee cost.
Right.
That can't go on anymore. I think he wants to say, here, you want to cut your deals? You pay for your deals. There's logic and reason behind that. The only way that's going to occur, though, is to give a reprieve, if you will, a reset, if you will, so that school boards can figure out if they can cut these deals, what they can pay, how they're going to pay what they're going to pay, or maybe take a step back. So a property tax freeze for taxpayers is badly needed. To your point about collective bargaining, the fact of the matter is flexibility and giving local units of government real control over their province, over what they do, makes enormous sense. In Illinois, you ask any mayor, except for the mayor of Chicago, because they're always carved out, their hands are tied. They're told, do this, that, and the other thing, pay for it yourselves, but it's mandated. So the idea of saying, look, guys, figure out for yourselves what you want to negotiate with your collective bargaining units, do what you want, and pay for it your way. And keep the state out of it. It's called mandate relief, and frankly, it lets local government, which is closest to the people, do their own thing, unencumbered by Springfield know-it-alls, which don't know that much.
But I will say, I haven't seen like the Illinois Municipal League, you know, jump on the bandwagon for that.
The Illinois Municipal League may not have jumped on the bandwagon for that issue per se, because they frankly see it. It's two sides to the coin, right? One is you're going to freeze my taxes, and municipalities get, what, 10% of the property tax? But it's 10% they need. And if you get into central and downstate Illinois, it's frankly pretty important because there aren't the same commercial
opportunities, resources, right?
Sales tax revenues aren't as plentiful in certain areas of the state. So I get that. In the overall context of things, do I think more municipalities think having flexibility and local control is a better thing than not? You bet. Do I think there's a wariness of jumping on board other than to say, leave my local tax, my local distributive tax, and give me my motor fuel tax and my 911 money? That's where they want to be. The fact of the matter is, as a former mayor, would I like more flexibility? Would I like to be able to do what I can do for my constituents free of as much Springfield entanglement as possible? No doubt about it.
But already we're hearing reports of some municipalities, some local school districts, believing that there will be an ultimate property tax freeze, are already trying to jump the rates.
You know, it's funny, Rick. If you're a suburban legislator like I am, they're doing it already. They've been doing it for years. School districts in the suburbs have been taxing to the maximum amount of PTEL, the limit
right.
on the tax cap, for years, and putting away on the side reserves that are frankly unconscionable. And Governor Rauner spoke to this way back in February. Look, tax equity means taking what you need, not taking what you want in case something bad happens or you presume something may be bad down the line. I get it. Some taxing bodies now are flexing their muscle in anticipation of a freeze. In the suburbs, they've been doing it for years, ever since PTEL came into existence. So I understand that. I wish it weren't being done. Maybe the answer is to go to a tax freeze for 5 years then and really equalize what's going on and give that reset a longer stay of reprieve so that we can all get our collective act together.
In that reset period, as you call it, that 2 years, is that enough time to truly fundamentally change the way we get taxed in
no,
the state?
But it will, no, it won't. But it gives that reprieve and that kind of cooling down period and that get ready, if you will. But whatever happens going forward will be phased in, Rick. There won't be a light switch that says we're going to reset all our taxing bodies starting January 2019. That's inconceivable and completely unworkable. Any type of change in the way we tax, in the way we collect revenue and where revenue goes will need to be phased in. And even the pension go forward shift, if you will, is contemplated on a 5 to 10 year go phase in period.
Right.
So there will be no, dastardly, okay, now we're changing the rules of engagement at light speed. And as you know, nothing in government is even remotely close to light speed.
That's a great way to sum it up. State Representative Ron Sandak, Republican from Downers Grove, thank you so much for getting up with me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
My pleasure.
We'll be back with more right after this.